I was growing up, our barn burned. All of the cattle, all of the equipment, everything was destroyed. My parents, in one night, lost their livelihood. The community came together and the next day helped bury the cattle. The next spring helped cut the logs. I was a part of watching a barn raising. That was community. One of the biggest values that I got from that is community is empowering. And that when you have people coming together, the power of that is incredible. I'm Mary McGlynn. I'm president of Power Speaking, and I've been with the company since its inception.
I'm Rick Gilbert. I'm the founder of Power Speaking. We started the company in 1985. Every once in a while, we'll be in a major corporate environment, and you'll see on the wall our values statement or our mission statement. And then you hear that the executives went off to, you know, Silverado Country Club for a week and had a flip chart and a high-priced consultant and came back with our 10 values. I have always thought that that was a giant waste of time. Nobody buys it, for one thing. It's all designed for PR, to look good. And these very companies that talk about people are our most important product, or laying people off right and left, or treating people badly sometimes. When this comes up in our case, should we sit down and really figure out what our values are? To my way of thinking, it's a waste of time. And I would say, let's just live the values instead of write them down and put them on the wall. If somebody walks into our company and can't tell in 5 seconds who we are by looking at the walls, looking at how people are interacting with each other, looking at the level of energy, we don't need a chart on the wall that says, we value people. If you don't get it coming in, a chart on the wall isn't going to help. And I have always said, not really only half joking, that money is only 3 or 4 on the list. It's down. I mean, I don't want us to go into debt, and I don't want to lose money. I mean, I just love it when you see somebody stand up for the first time maybe in their entire lives, and they throw out their chest, and they say something strong, and they look in the eye. And we made that happen. It's what the business is about. Now, if you can make money doing that, that's great. And I wouldn't do it if we couldn't make money. But the point is, it's about that passion. It's not about the money.
The word that always comes to mind for me is community. My name is Mitch Slomiak. I work as the company's outside or consulting chief financial officer, variously called a rent-a-CFO or a virtual CFO. Most companies I work with or know don't think that community has anything to do with business, or it's just not in the vocabulary. At Power Speaking, it's the fiber of the company. The fact that it's a company that's wholly owned by two individuals, Rick and Mary, who are married, is not allowed to take away from the desire to have this be a community. So everyone is treated really wonderfully, not just through financial generosity, which in some ways is the least of it, but there's a lot of relationship building. There are events for trainers. There was recently a retreat for the entire company, and there's just the day-to-day and week-to-week communications pattern where people are honored, people's stories are told. It's not simply a matter of, oh, we did so much revenue with Cisco or Genentech or this or that customer, but really we're celebrating the successes of the individual trainers or staff members, the contributors, and we're also learning from what they've done. And there's just so much relationship and intimacy I've seen here and experienced here over time. So to me, that's very unique, and I really wish that every one of my clients was like this, because community is very dear to me.
They honored me and sent me on a trip with my girls to Ireland, where my mom was from, as a kind of benefit for the work that I've done.
My name is Moira Cavanaugh, and I'm the Vice President of Sales and Marketing. I'm Melinda Henning, and I'm a all-purpose senior trainer and consultant with Power Speaking. I was over dropping by to drop something off here the other day, and Lisa was just finishing her very first official program. And the whole office was gathering around with champagne to congratulate her. What a milestone. That's typical. We encourage each other.
The thing that I heard other trainers say that had worked here, and you know what attracted me to even pursuing working with Power Speaking, was the opportunity to be in a community as opposed to just a Lone Ranger. So that's one of the things, just the overall community that they try to create. And the second piece is I like the two-trainer model as well. I think that's a lot of fun to see different people's styles. And even though I've been training for 20 years, it's an awesome learning experience, because every time you see someone else do something, then there are things you can take away from that and observations that you get from other people that you wouldn't have if you weren't working with a partner.
Power Speaking has the unique challenge of having more than half of its key participants as contractors. Their Power Speaking is essentially competing with other businesses that contract for these for the time and loyalty of these people. So whether or not community was the angle, some sort of loyalty program would be essential from the business perspective to keep people with the company for as long as Power Speaking has, because if the turnover rate became too high with trainers, then the business couldn't grow very much at all.
So Power Speaking people, it's who they are and what they do. And they can't help themselves. They kind of have to do it. And isn't it great that there's a way to get paid to do who you are? My name is Fritz Browner. I'm on the board of Power Speaking, and I've been on the board for 20-plus years. Rick and Mary and their whole team and you all as trainers, you get to be who you are, which is really cool. So is that a job? Well, yes, but it's really more than that. It's just you show up to be who you are.
There's not one person that I wouldn't want to go out and do a training with. I was talking to a woman from Hewlett-Packard, and she said, the thing about you guys that's so unique is that you could put all the names in a hat, draw out two, and you'd have a dynamite program. And it's because of the people that are around you. So having the quality of the training team, you know, that's where you get the innovation. That's where you get the attempt to try something new. That's the quarterly event where they say, you know what? I didn't like it the way that, and then suddenly we have a slide burst concept or something like that.
Because of having a community and the way they look at the people who come into the organization, as even if you're a contractor, that you still have the opportunity to say, you know, here's what I think. And they may or may not act on that or take it in, but I think that they want to be inclusive in that. Hmm. That's different from other organizations, because they may say, well, welcome, but keep your mouth shut. You know, don't tell us where we're going with our business or how we're going to manage it. And so that's a whole different, that's part of that, what's attraction? You know, what's the key piece there is I think that your opinion matters.
The trainer selection process is long and arduous.
When I was studying biology before I went into business, I was thinking about going to medical school, and I took a lot of biology classes and took a class in cell physiology. And one of the things that was most exciting to me in that was a reality called the semi-permeable membrane. It's the way that all biological systems operate. It's based on osmosis, so that the way that your brain gets the oxygen is that the blood takes the oxygen to the brain cell, and then there's an osmosis, and the cell kind of sucks the oxygen in and does the work it does to make proteins and stuff. But what I really like about this concept of the semi-permeable membrane, some things can come in, some are pushed out, some can't get in. And I've thought that that's really a good model for management and for running a company. And we find a lot of people who would like to join us, but the semi-permeable membrane won't let them in because they don't have the correct value system or the skill set that we're looking for. And so a lot of people come to approach us that we don't work with. And sometimes it can be kind of painful because we're partway down the road with them and then, oop, not quite a good fit. And I think that's one of the reasons that the team works so well, is because it's hard to get in. And I think that one of the things we've always felt is, if I don't want to go to dinner with this person, then I don't want to work with them.
Don't come to this company because you just want another program to train. My name is Carrie Kurbis-Lehman. I've been with the company for 12 years, and I'm a trainer and coach. Come to this company because you resonate with its values and its purpose. But that's the only way it's really going to work. Because if you do resonate with it, it's going to be so satisfying and so much fun. And if you don't, then it's just going to be a bumpy ride.
If somebody comes into our office and sees the office staff and won't acknowledge them, but just says hi to me and Mary, they're out. I want to work with people who are egalitarian. And that's one of the reasons I always make this big hoop-de-doo about politics, because I believe everything we do is political. And if you have people who are hierarchical in their thinking, that's a political statement. That's not the way we want to run our business. We want people who have some empathy for the people they're dealing with.
Sometimes in other trainer companies, there's a split between the staff and the trainers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you want new trainers to know about those two camps of people in this company?
We don't separate them.
We don't separate them.
Mm-mm.
At all.
No.
Mm-mm. We don't want to.
No. I think that's what makes this company so much different from other companies and so much greater than other companies, is that we don't. I mean, we know that, you know, they have a different role. I mean, we have different roles. But we know that in the end that we're all just one big, you know, company, one big team, mm-hmm. one big family. So
I think that makes us all appreciate each other more, mm-hmm. because we get to know them and they get to know us. And like Charlene said, everything that we do helps them and everything they do. I mean, we can't not have each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's great that we're on a personal basis with them and have friendships with them.
I'm Tracy Lewis. I do the logistics.
I'm Charlene Boumagat, and I manage the program coordination logistics.
I'm David Azevedo. I'm the finance manager. No one's above wiping down a table.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes after a program, for a while there, Mary was coming in and helping, you know, wipe down tables at the end of an open program. The other day, Nicole had to clean up three rooms, so I helped her out a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. no one's above doing anything at any time. If someone needs support, we're there to assist each other.
If someone came in that you all felt wasn't a good fit, but Mary and Rick liked them, that they would have to think a long time before they'd override what you all had to say?
Yeah, I think they would definitely listen to our opinion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If there's a red flag, if an individual on the team who's been on the team for a significant amount of time, there was a couple of people that we interviewed when we had some, and there were one or two people that a red flag went up, and that was it, end of discussion. In the hiring process, we try to find people that aren't out for themselves and are out to contribute to something bigger. You know, you can put your fingerprint on, but that you're not the one at the helm. There are people at the helm, but they're not up there swinging their arms and waving the flags and victory, victory, me, all about me. Mm-hmm. It's all about us as a group.
We look for somebody who has a personality that is not egomaniacal. Somebody who is really a team player. When we set up a program, we generally have two trainers. These two trainers need to communicate well. They need to get along. Every single person in the audience can tell whether or not the two trainers have respect for each other. So if we have respect for that person right in the beginning, we're pretty sure that the participants are going to feel that too.
I'm Sarah Zeff Geber, and now I am on the board of Power Speaking. They never send a trainer out into the field that hasn't absolutely proven their mettle in the classroom.
The most obvious expectation is that the trainers that come work for us have to have stellar stand-up speaking skills. My name is Melissa Schwartz. I am Vice President of Training for Power Speaking, Inc., because everything that we teach, we have to be able to model. And if we are not modeling, the participants don't see it. And so the learning opportunity kind of decreases a little bit.
It would be fabulous for every single person to have, I've taught presentation skills, I've used the video camera, I know how to do this, I've been on stage.
Good luck.
We like to have keynote experience. Somebody who's been up on the stage and who's really gone through this whole process of using microphones.
More than just a trainer, but somebody who actually is a keynote speaker, has handled an audience of 1,500 people for 45 minutes, not just a trainer. That's an enormously helpful experience, hard to find.
Another thing that we look at is, what's the facilitation skill level? Do they handle things that are difficult? How do they handle things that are difficult?
We were working with Hewlett-Packard a number of years ago. There was a woman in the program who was having a hard time. And one of the things that we do, as you know, is called stop-action coaching. Well, this woman was not doing well. I had stopped her a number of times, and I went too far. I began to see her bottom lip start to quiver. I thought, oh, shit, I've done it. I've blown it. She stops, walks over, grabs her purse and her stuff, and walks out the door and slams the door. I tried to catch her. It didn't work. I thought, oh, that's just awful. It gives a bad message to everybody in the room, and plus we've made somebody's life a lot more painful than it needed to be, and I felt horrible about it. I was able to find out who she was, her phone number, and so forth. I called her up, and I interviewed her a little bit on the phone, and I said, I'm terribly sorry about what happened. I want to make it up to you. If you will do it, we'd like to offer you a free spot in our open workshop to see if you can get back on the horse. She came to the free workshop, and once again, a lot of this stuff started up, but I handled it differently this time. She was in the front of the room. She was all quaky and shaky, and I went up and stood next to her, and I touched her for a minute, and I said, you know, just talk to me. Never mind these people. Just talk to me. And I got her to talk to me, and then I backed away, and she was talking louder, and pretty soon she got over it, and she was fine. I heard later that she went on to be president of her professional organization and speak a lot. It was a success story.
Just today, I had a participant come to me 10 minutes before the class start and say, I have to talk to you privately. And he sat me down in the coaching room in private, and he said, I am so afraid of this. I'm terribly afraid. I didn't know this was going to be a class. I thought it was going to be individual coaching. Is there some way that I could not take this class today? I mean, can you give me some individual coaching first? I just don't really think that I can do this. And so I just listened to him, and I said, you know, tell me more about it, and did anything happen? And, well, what are the symptoms going to be? If you take the class and you freak out, will you throw up? Will you faint? Should I use my CPR? What actually happens to you? He said, well, I forget my train of thought, and I, you know, no, I won't faint or anything. And so I just said, okay, here's the deal. Everything in the class is optional. It is a guided set of experiences which is designed exactly for that. And little by little, baby steps, you get over it. And so I will look to you every time there's a chance for an exercise, and if you don't want to participate, that's fine. And I turned to the other end of the room to start the video go-round, and he said, I want to go first.
We need somebody who is warm, who people can feel a connection to right away, because you can't be a truly effective coach if the participant isn't with you, if the participant doesn't like you, trust you, respect the feedback you're giving. And that takes kind of a special person to be able to give people sometimes sensitive feedback in a way that's trustful and kind. I mean, that's a really big piece of it.
I think the most difficult thing about coaching is that focused attention has to be there for every single person that you're coaching during the day. And that, to me, is one of the greatest challenges, is just having that. I've got, you know, this 10 minutes or this 7 minutes or this 12 minutes with this person, and I need to be there and fully present. And I've got to be fully present for number 1 or number 12.
You also have to have someone who's really good at multitasking, because in the coach role, you're watching the tape, you're watching the participant, you're writing in their book, you're listening for the content pieces, you're watching for the style pieces. I mean, there's a lot going on.
It's such an art form. The technology is challenging.
That the trainers have to use.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
The computers.
The computers, the camera, the playbacks, everything. Here's the magnificence. The seasoned trainer makes it look like nothing.
One of the things Mary said is it's going to take you 4 or 5 times to get the muscle memory to make it happen.
I would say to a new trainer to give themselves time and also honor the fact that it's not an easy thing. And I know that most of the trainers that have come on here are high achievers and demand a lot of themselves. So there's this expectation that out of the gate that they should have it down. And, you know, this is one of those grows with you and you get better over time.
Check your ego at the door. Come with a lot of humility and beginner's mind and know that, you know, the thing is, people already know you're good, and the less you resist having input and taking feedback about how you're applying this method, the faster you're going to get up to speed and the more easy it's going to be on your journey.
I think the key for new trainers to be successful at this company is to be really open to coaching. My name is Lisa Rothman, and I am a trainer at Power Speaking. We ask the participants in the workshop to be open to coaching, and it's essential that we as trainers also be open to coaching from our peers and from everybody at the office.
It takes a lot of time, and it's a pain in the butt, and it's worth it, because your investment in that process will have huge dividends when you're actually out there in the field.
There's also the staff that's internal. This morning at our board meeting, Erna commented, "Your team works so well together." She talked about how she can call, she gets answers right away, there's a response, there's a human at the other end, she always knows things are going to be taken care of.
My name is Patricia McDougall. I'm the Director of Sales Education at NetApp. Power Speaking is unbelievably well organized and always a step ahead of me or 2 steps ahead of me. It's not the only thing that's on my plate at work, so I really appreciate the fact that they are ahead of me and are providing me with whatever tools and information I need to keep the process rolling forward. You know, it's going to be at this time, at this place. They're always on time. They're always organized, unbelievably well organized. And I would have to say, too, that things like equipment and just all the things that you work with when you work with Power Speaking is first class. It's neat, it's clean, it's the latest, it's sleek in some cases. So all the way from, you know, sort of back office paper type stuff to interfacing with people on the telephone and making all those kinds of connections, all the way through to production and using tools and technology, I find Power Speaking to be really in a leadership position.
Stacy, in terms of handling logistics, how's it been to work with Power Speaking?
You know, the presenters come right in, they set it all up. They need minimal support from us, which is a learning department's dream to have partners like that. And, you know, the evaluations that they send right, you know, after the workshop, you know, are always just so positive from the participants. And just, you know, I find the whole process to be very easy.
I'm amazed that you have not also gone into the business of customer service training. I'm Rod Harris. I'm the Learning and Development Staff Representative for Lockheed Martin's Information Systems and Global Services Enterprise in San Jose, California. And that is, again, based on my experience with the office people. Again, very cordial, very likable, very willing to listen to what your needs are, very flexible, and very creative in how they can help.
As one of the road warriors for the company, I think that when we're on the road and things go wrong, first of all, with this office staff, there's just this natural ability we must screen for in interviews where the office staff anticipates problems. They have thought about things way out ahead. My name is Dan Farley, and I am a trainer here at Power Speaking. I've never, ever had any doubt. Things always go wrong on the road. Flights get canceled, hotel rooms are booked, and whatever. And I always know that the staff back here, and it's whoever picks up the phone, it's definitely the folks that manage the travel and whatnot, but I know that anytime I need something from the office, I don't have to think for a second about whether or not it's going to come through. And that allows me to focus on the job when I'm on the road.
This is the most supportive administrative staff that I've ever had the privilege of working with. From the quick turnaround time on getting invoices and expenses paid to the prompt answering of the telephone, returning of calls, returning emails, always with a friendly tone of voice and tremendous efficiency. It's just been a delight to work with everybody in the office without exception.
Their team is, and more so even than a year ago, is really unified. They complement one another. They're all on the same page. And so they've been around Rick and Mary long enough that I think they've got Moira wouldn't still be here if she didn't have similar values to Rick and Mary. And so they could both leave tomorrow, and I think, other than the management vacuum, that they understand what Rick and Mary are trying to accomplish. They have the values, and it would at least last for, you know, many years going forward.
They want you to serve a purpose, and you do serve a purpose in terms of making the company run. They also want you to honor your values, and they expect you to take care of that. They expect that of all of us. And what's interesting is that I think part of the requirement or part of who they tend to hire are people who have very clear and strong values. And that's what they look for in a person. So I think they really expect us to say what works and what doesn't and how this will fit in and create the boundaries.
I came on as daycare provider for Power Speaking.
Initially,
yeah. When the kids started getting older and they didn't need daycare as much, they allowed me to come work in the office, you know, for my own growth and to be a part of the team here. And I think I was working like 1 hour, two times a week or 2 hours. I mean, it just goes to show like how wonderful how they, that was the only time I had because I still had a baby. And so they allowed me like started at 1 hour, two times a week, and then it went to like 2 hours, a couple days a week. And they just let me grow with the company as my kids went off into school. One thing that a lot of people probably don't know about Power Speaking that Rick and Mary really encourage is for everybody who works here to better themselves, whether it be take a computer class or take a photography class or take yoga or anything that we are actually interested in. Rick and Mary encourage every one of us to do that. And that they would, you know, pay for us to better ourselves, mm-hmm. which is a really incredible thing. I mean, I don't know any other companies that do such a thing.
If it's outside, if it's not within your job mm-hmm. description. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, it's really neat. Yeah.
It doesn't need to be within your job because their feeling is it will add something mm-hmm. somewhere at some time. There will be an experience that you have that you'll be able to draw on.
Exactly.
And I think it's true.
Mm-hmm. And you'll be a happier person mm-hmm. in the end, and mm-hmm. like you said, which makes you happier at work.
I was working at Power Speaking for a couple of years before I decided that I was going to come out and say that I was gay.
Mary spent quite a bit of time with me just talking to me about the importance of family and the importance to be vulnerable and to take time and to communicate with my family and to be patient. And that's not something that I would get from anybody. I mean, like, I'd get it from other people, but for her to reach out to me and say, you know, let me help you through this because I'm the same age as your mom. I've, you know, come from the same kind of religious background and I can provide you a perspective. And I think that she's done that.
If there is one person in my life that has made a difference in how we treat people is, it's my mother. She had the sense of everyone being equal and the sense of kindness no matter what. And so I try to emulate that. And I think it sounds a little corny, but that value of kindness and looking at every single person coming into that workshop requires some gentleness and requires some love. And it's a stressful situation. So just allowing that person to flourish, allowing that person to express himself or herself, and doing it in a gentle way, has helped grow the business.
From the very beginning, Mary and I were in complete agreement about how you treat people. A lot of our competitors won't pay contractors until they get paid by their client. And so a contractor may end up holding a debt for 90 days before they get paid. And from the very beginning, we said, what's that about? I mean, we're not hurting for money. We've got money in the bank. So we initially paid people the week they do the program. Before we had a more sophisticated accounting system, we went out and wrote people a check. They walk out the door, they get a check. That doesn't hurt us at all. I mean, maybe we lose a little tiny bit of interest by paying the money out. But the point is you build rapport with that. I believe that a business kind of finds its own level. And we tend to be drawn to companies that have really high-quality products but aren't very good at marketing, kind of like us. And if somebody comes in and says, you know, I want you to teach my people how to be perfect and how to stand up and be good-looking tall men in blue suits with red power ties, and I'll say, guess what, Bob? I got some referrals for you, but that's not what we do. We encourage people to let her rip. And in your environment, I don't think you want people to let her rip. And so I think that, in a sense, people are drawn to us who appreciate the values that we express. And I think that's what's helped to build our business a lot. We have literally gotten business from competitors because the competitors have a hard-charging sales force who are relentless. We don't do any selling in that sense at all. We don't do a lot of cold calling. We're not in your face. People say we don't have the budget for it, and our big-time handling of that objection is, oh, okay. When do you want us to call back? And I think that people like to be treated that way.
It's a family business, many of whose customers are Fortune 500 type companies. So it's an interesting dichotomy there, if you will. And then I guess both sides of that equation have benefited. Rick and Mary, what's special is them and the culture that's permeated through their trainers and the staff. And it just shows that, what do you know? You can have your values, you can stick to your values, you can be successful doing it your way. And not everybody will buy that, but they've pretty much stayed themselves in spite of lots of other maybe customers trying to get them to be somebody different.
What makes this company unique, and what is it about the people here? My name is Erna Gross, and I am on the board of Power Speaking, and I think it's the caliber of players or coaches that are involved. I think it's the leadership philosophy. I think it's the slyly off-the-wall humor of Rick. I think it's impressive to watch Rick and Mary yin-yang balance each other from a business perspective. And I think it's the magic that comes about because of those different dimensions.
A number of years ago, we were looking for something to give our clients for Christmas. We always like to do things that are unusual, like we give them calendars, photographs taken by our daughter, Katie. And so this particular year, in addition to the calendar, we decided to make a donation in their name to a project called the Heifer Project. This is a very innovative project that goes into very poor third world countries and gives people animals with the idea that if you have goats, let's say, you don't sell the goat, you don't eat the goat, you raise the goat, you have a lineage of goats, and you milk, you sell the milk, then you actually might sell the goats later as you build up your herd and stuff. And it's very successful. So we told the board that we wanted to give our clients a donation to the Heifer Project. The board went ballistic. They said, this is so hokey. This is so woo-woo. You know, you're dealing with the Republican power structure with these big companies, and you're going out into the third world, you know, socialism, help all the poor, spread the wealth, yada, yada. They said, this is the most ridiculous thing we've ever heard. And they started laughing about all this stuff, you know, roosters for Ramadan, hens for Hanukkah, you know, it was the funniest and most outrageous meeting we ever had. Mary and I walked away from that feeling depressed, and the wind had been completely deflated from our sails. And we thought about it a few days later, and we said, you know what, to hell with them. This is a good idea, we're going to do it anyway. Well, guess what? It was a huge success, and all our clients just loved it. And we made these wreaths that had the little $100 you know, donation card on it, and we put little baby chickens and cows and goats in the wreaths, gave them to people. People were loving it. So we went back to the board and said, well, you know, thanks for sharing, but we did it the way we wanted to do it. And it was really funny, and we still joke about all of that stuff. But mostly the board is extremely helpful to us and been a huge part of our success.
Both Rick and Mary, in diametrically different ways, bring a very personal approach to a very business-like environment. They actually put the human in, you know, business.
So, John, could you just characterize, if you can, what Rick's approach is and what Mary's approach is?
Rick's is, I believe he would pride himself on just being real and telling it like it is and letting it rip, you know, going for whatever he perceives out of a situation, explaining that to people and trying to show them how they can use whatever it is they have as their personal strength. Mary's, I believe, is more of it's a not softer in terms of feminine, but it's a more moderate approach to trying to bring people out of themselves and get good things out of them. One is sort of a fire and brimstone infusion, and the other one is a soft and caring extraction of the same qualities.
My thought is that if you always do things the way other people recommend that you do it, you're not going to come up with ideas that are going to be innovative. When we came up with speaking to the big dogs, a lot of people said, bad idea. And if I had not been a loose cannon and had not been able to see past all that flack, we'd have no big dogs program and we'd be half the company we are today. So one of the things I've learned is be a loose cannon. Think outside the box. You hear that all the time. But are you really willing to do it? Are you willing to put your money, your investment, your time, your precious time where your mouth is, and you might fall on your face? You just don't know. Our motto as a business and our motto in training people to do presentations is let her rip. And what I mean by that, you hear this thing that just is like fingernails on a blackboard. Practice makes perfect. What nonsense. What unadulterated crap. You know, now maybe if you're a brain surgeon or you're landing a 747 at SFO, man, I hope that you're thinking about perfection. But anything in the arts, drawing, painting, dancing, sculpture, and my God, for sure, public speaking skills, you have to let her rip. You have to get up there and just feel what's going on in your belly and embrace the mistakes. To hell with the mistake. This is not we're not doing the Academy Awards here somehow, where everything has to be exactly perfect, televised to half the world. That's not what we're doing. We're teaching people to stand up, throw caution to the wind, damn the torpedoes, get up there, feel what's churning in their gut, and say, this is what I believe we should do, and march forward. And say that out loud. And who cares if you got sweat rings under your armpits or you're drooling or you get your words all screwed up or you have a speech impediment? Who cares? What we're looking for here is that sense of the vision, that passion, that excitement that somebody brings. And so that's the let her rip philosophy. And in fact, we can't see it on this tape because we're only audio. I have that tattooed on my back. True story, honest to God, tattooed on my back. And so I've got some skin in the game. And when people come to work with us and they see this tattoo, which I proudly show every newcomers, we say to them, hey, we'll pay for it. You want to get a tattoo? We'll pay for it. See if you can put skin in the game.
I laugh now because there's the motto of it's not about perfection and let her rip. That was the teaching model, but in actuality, the running of the business, Rick and Mary, and Rick in particular, paid attention to every detail. From how the boxes were packed, to how the rooms were set up, to the angle of the workbooks, to I literally would keep an envelope above my the typewriter where he wanted the label smack in the middle at this level, and he wanted the stamps of the first class to go in a particular way, and I kept it there for an example.
There's a lot of times when we come into a meeting and there's this perception of, okay, well, this person's going to have this stance. You know, Rick's anti-growth, and he doesn't want the company to grow. Well, I don't know if that's really true, and I'm not going to let... I'm not going to carry that into the meeting. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit at the table and I'm going to listen to what he has to say and I'm going to challenge him. And I'm going to say, well, Rick, last week you said this. So you're sending me a mixed message. And he says, well, you're just going to have to deal with it. And you're just going to have to deal with the shades of gray. And he said something to the effect of, intelligent people deal with shades of gray. And that comment pissed me off. And I recorded it. At the end of the meeting, I was a little jerk. And I turned to Moira and I said, well, Moira, this meeting's done. And I guess we're just going to have to be intelligent and deal with the shades of gray. Because I'm intelligent and so are you. The next morning, he came in and he apologized to me. And he apologized to the group. So the difficulties that we have don't carry on for weeks or months. That's like the main thing that makes me comfortable here, is that if something's wrong, I'm going to know about it. If something needs to be fixed, we're going to try to fix it. And there's not going to be this behind-the-closed-door talk.
The biggest challenge that the company faces in the next few years is really the Rick pulling back and pulling out of the company, although it's been a gradual and I think sometimes a painful process for Rick to kind of disengage himself with the company that he built that really carried his name for the majority of the years, watching the inevitability of the company change kind of behind him. And so Rick wanting to look back and keep some control and keep his hand in the pot is a struggle for everybody.
His sort of, you know, no holes barred, no bull way of saying, this is how it is, and, you know, whether you agree with the guy or not, it's like, you just love him for taking a stand. So I will miss that a lot. I don't think he can go in the background enough to not bring that in from wherever he is. But it is, he has a unique leadership. I can hear him saying, no, this is the way we want to do this piece, and this, because he's just so clear and so passionate.
My concern is that as the company grows, we're going to change. We're going to develop in new ways. We're going to be bigger. We're going to have more systems in place. We'll have more people in place. And it will be very much a different company than when we were just 5 years old. I think that's part of growth, and I think there's you just have to get used to it, get over it. And we're doing our best to try to keep in place a lot of the things that we hold dearest in the company. And that's one of the reasons we're making this program right now, today, is so that people understand, where did we come from? What was our philosophy? What's our passion about? What do we really care about? Why are certain things done in certain ways?
There are transitions that are going on right now. The major transition is, how is Rick going to work in this business? So He's going to be looking at reducing his time, and he has strong feelings about how much growth there should be.
Financially, obviously, it's great to grow, and I have always been pro-growth. Pro-growth with
the integrity of the product remaining. Mm. If the integrity of the product is sacrificed because of the growth, then I don't want the growth. So I was at a party. They hear that I work at PowerSpeaking. They're four, you know, they're Genentech employees. They come over to me. There's three of them, and they're like hooing and hawing about PowerSpeaking. Great. They're lighting up, mm-hmm. and I'm like getting totally excited. I want that experience. Whoever goes through our product or uses our products mm-hmm. in 10 years, I want that same reaction and that same level of integrity with the product to remain. I think the work that we do is so great. I mean, it changes people's lives and it makes them better. And it's kind of like a wanting to share it. It's like when you cook a home-cooked meal and you invite all your friends over, you want to see them enjoy it.
My name is Stephanie Moore, and my role is a corporate trainer. The organization could be at risk of losing its essence. And that would be devastating because it is the essence that has made this company what it is.
In the last year, the trainers have grown from probably a core of about 8 or 10 to close to 20. So that's a huge change. And I know from being on the board that it's harder for Rick and Mary to feel like they have the kind of control over things that they used to. Everything from quality control to just simply managing it all, moving the pegs around and making sure that there are trainers available for every program that's asked for.
When somebody starts a little baking company in their kitchen and then they get a really big professional kitchen and the cookies taste different, I'm concerned about that. And because I think I might even get choked up as I say it, I think part of the beauty of this company is how much they care about every little thing. Mm-hmm. They care hugely about every single trainer and their life and their passion. And then they care about that they have the highest quality equipment and the best, you know, everything is just top drawer. It's so high quality. And there's so much heart in every little piece. You get too spread out, you know, start taking shortcuts with how you're bringing people on board, because I think that piece of going through every program as a participant and as an observer, as excruciating as it may be to someone who's already got their chops going on, I think it's really important. And I know that they started to do that. They started to shortcut or fast track some people and realized that that wasn't going to work. So I'm proud of them for getting that they don't need to scrimp on quality. And I think I can see them struggling with the demand of the marketplace and wanting to respond to that and also not wanting to lose what got them there in the first place. And so I'm really rooting for them to really not be tugged to before they're ready and to keep with what they know is right, because, man, they got it going on.
The decision of growth versus non-growth, I mean, that's been one of those issues, you know, that keeps coming back and around, because it's been a very conscious decision in the past to not grow it very big. It's been mom and pops. It's been, let's make it be, here we go on that perfectionism or the best that we can control and have that consistent high quality all the time out the gate. When you're mom and pops, you can control that and make sure and ensure that that will happen. If it gets bigger, can that quality still be maintained? Can that level of consistency still be maintained?
I'm going to be taking on a larger and larger role in terms of running the company. In truth, I'm pretty much the operations manager. And as I've looked at the books and done some analysis and talked to various people, the concept of controlled growth is exactly the direction I'd like to go in personally, because I think that it allows for the company to become even more, have greater strength. It gives us a greater strength for the future. It allows more people to get the skills. It allows more people to have right livelihood. I think it's tremendously positive.
The problem that I have with that is that we're already a fairly successful company. We're well known in the Bay Area. We have international clients. We're making pretty good livings for everybody who works for us. You know, we're chugging along here. It's just great. That at the time of this particular tape, we're going to be a $3 million company by this year, we believe. So my question is, do we want to be a $6 million company? Well, what does that involve? Right now, we have 15 or 16 trainers. We have two or three people in the back office who are crunching numbers and sending out, you know, expense reports and collecting checks. And now, double the company, let's say, in 5 years. Well, pretty soon you've got 30 trainers and you have 10 back office people. And my question is, why do you want to do that? Does it mean that the owners are going to retire with a lot more money? Are we going to be richer? Well, I'm not sure. Sometimes you can just crank up the volume. You go to bed exhausted every night and you're really not building that wealth that you thought you were. And it just creates a huge number of headaches. So one of the discussions we're having is how much should we build the company? Because I think if the building of the company is all about more video cameras and more trainers, I think that's a dead-end road.
We had one ugly incident where Rick and I were literally screaming at each other, and Moira was cowering in the corner, not knowing what to do with Mom and Dad. And we resolved to have a process. So if we're trying to figure it out, or we don't agree with each other, it's a matter of, okay, we need to talk, and it needs to be in private at this point. And
there are occasions when we will have a disagreement. This only happened a couple of times. And we simply can't come to terms on it. And we have our Supreme Court. It's the board. And so we will go to the board and we'll lay out our cases, and then their decision, whatever they say, that's who wins, and it's done.
I find it strange in a way, because I know that when I support wholeheartedly one of their opinions during a meeting, that I could be setting off a firestorm that night when they are at home. So I do try to be equally critical and demeaning of both of them through the meeting.
Can I just add on to that, in terms of the respect, that just again today, but it's not at all the first time, we were discussing an issue that Rick and Mary had vastly different points of view on. But way better than I could do if my spouse and I were in a similar situation. Mary just sat there and listened without a peep, maybe a facial tick once in a while, but listened without a peep for maybe 5 minutes as Rick explained his point of view. And I knew that Mary's was 100% opposite. But boy, you won't find most people in the world that will do that. So absolutely.
Level of respect.
And although they're quite different, they allow each other their individuality and individual opinions and perspectives.
Rick said, right from the beginning, we need to have some advisors. We're teachers. We don't know a lot about business. We need other people who have some expertise, another perspective. When we get scared, we can call them. We have another part of the foundation that's there. And so that has been something that has really helped along the way.
So, John, you've been on the board 12 years, Fritz 20, Ernest 6 years. You've obviously been loyal board members, clearly advocates for this company. What keeps you coming back year after year?
For me, they started paying about 5 or 6 years ago. I think that it's a company that you get invested in. It is like family, and they support you in, you know, other ways. We come and support them in the growth of the business. And in many ways, it's like a case study. It's being able to watch and see a company grow and evolve and turn from a we don't sign no stinking contracts type of organization, which I remember was a quote from Rick, to we need to have contracts in place and, you know, protect the assets of the company and make sure that we're here for the long term for our employees.
Fritz.
I think one of the many reasons I stay is that, first, I like Rick and Mary. And it's an enjoyable Saturday morning just being around people that you like and enjoy, number one. Number two is they are a husband and wife business, just like I have a husband and wife business. And so many of the issues that they come up with, even though we're in totally different industries, I can relate to.
I think the reason that I stay engaged is I've seen the results of what their products do. And I am actually one of the recipients of having a successful turnaround ability to interact with the executives. And I believe in promoting that. And I think it's a unique differentiator. I will say Rick and Mary have a very critical role as to why I stay engaged. And I believe in what their philosophy and value system is. And I believe in helping them succeed. And I truly hope to see Power Speaking here 20 years from now at playing at a whole nother level.
Mary and I have a mutual friend who came to visit the other day, and she wrote a nice note. And in her note, one of the comments she said to me is, she said, one of the things I've admired about your business is that you've done it your own way. And that is just huge. I mean, and I think most entrepreneurs leave their corporate jobs or strike out on their own, not because they're interested in money, but because they want control. They want to do it themselves. And damn, we've been able to do that from the beginning. And so we put stuff together, and if it doesn't work, then we don't do it anymore. And if it works, we go on with that. And there's been so much change in our business. And you look at the way we developed the speaking to the big dogs component. I would hate to have been working for a standard company of some kind or even another one of the larger training firms and say, hey, I'd like to start this new thing called Speaking the Big Dog. We don't, you know, the only people we clear it with are each other. And if it feels right between Mary and myself, we'll get some input from the board. Off we go. And that's just energizing. It's been a great way to live.